This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Gentrification continues to be on a lot of people's minds as the city of San Francisco goes through a shift in racial demographics. But census data show people of color make up over half of the city's population. A group of local artists and writers of color want to remind people about the city's diversity. They're part of the anthology Endangered Species, Enduring Values. The collection features works by over 70 contributors and illustrates the diverse experiences and cultural richness of the city. Shizue Siegel is the editor of Endangered Species, Enduring Values. She's been part of San Francisco's literary scene for decades. KELW's Janae Darden speaks with Shizue, or Shiz, about the book.
What does the title mean to you, and why did you create this book?
Well, initially, I had been thinking, because of gentrification, people of color were the endangered species, and that we survived because of our enduring values, spiritual values, our connection with history, with the land, with each other. But after a while, especially after the last national election, I realized that we are all, human beings are endangered all over the planet. And that there was something about people of color that was a value because we have had to survive on less for a long time. So I asked people in the call for submissions for this book.
Which was going to be my next question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I was going to ask you, what were you looking for when you sent out the call for submissions?
You know, I really wasn't sure what to expect, but I do know that I'm interested in the voices of real people, not just trained writers.
And many of the writers in your book came together last month at the main branch of the San Francisco Public Library to present their work, and I was there. Tony Robles is one of the people who made the cut of those more than 70 contributors that you have in the book. And he's a fourth generation San Franciscan. And he wrote about the flavor of San Francisco in his piece, Soul Medicine.
Barbecue and cornbread and greens made by black hands. Adobo and rice eaten with thick brown fingers. A handwritten love note with a number 2 pencil. A street sax blowing colors across the sky. Tortillas and rice and beans and abuelitas' voices rising through rooftops. Murals on our skin, wet with our stories, our lives, our revolution.
Well, the piece was inspired by the black out-migration and the tragedy, which is that, because so much of the black community, you know, facilitated people of color knowing who they were or even to become curious about who they were. So in a lot of ways, the black community in San Francisco was the roux, right, that the base, right? The music, and we all felt that, you know. So that's something that's missing in San Francisco right now. You know, my uncle was a very highly regarded poet, you know, and one of his...
Who was your uncle?
My uncle, Al Robles. He was a Manila Town poet of the I Hotel. He grew up in the Western Tradition, and one of the lines of his poems was, sometimes my heart is black, and sometimes my heart is brown, and sometimes my heart is black and brown at the same time. Sometimes my heart is Chinese, and sometimes my heart is Japanese. Sometimes my heart is Chinese and Japanese at the same time. Sometimes my belly is Chinese, and sometimes my belly is Latino, and sometimes my belly is Chinese and Latino at the same time.
Tony is real. And Tony, he owns the blend of all of the things that have made him and continue to impact him every day. He celebrates it all.
So let's hear from one writer who recently made the Bay Area home.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kelechi Ubozo, and I am a trauma survivor and a mental health advocate, and really excited to be part of this collection and see all you beautiful brown faces. This piece is called Lost and Found. When you arrive in San Francisco, a rebirth happens. Not that you are becoming someone new. Sometimes you're becoming who you were always meant to be. Maybe you're the Black poet going through a never-ending goth phase like me. Or you could just be a Black artist stifled by her strict parents' idea of success, like my mother. Mama arrived in San Francisco 37 years ahead of me. Growing up in an all-white neighborhood in Long Island, New York, was painful. For her older siblings, being part of the only Black family in the area was glorious. They were invited to the best parties. Everyone wanted to watch them dance, touch their thick afros, and be their best friend. None of this was extended to my shy, frumpy, lackluster mama. She was a hidden gem that no one was looking for. When I asked her why she traveled across the country to a place she'd never seen outside of magazines, she'd sigh and wistfully gaze toward the closest windows. It's a place where the lost go to find themselves.
That's Kelechi Ubozo, and there's a line in her piece after she talks about following her mother's footsteps to find herself in the Bay Area. And she says, Mama was right. Location is everything. Acceptance is expensive, and the city is fluid. I asked Kelechi about what that line means for her personally.
Yeah, you know, actually when the election happened, I considered moving back to Atlanta because I can afford it. And then when Trump was elected, I was like, well, I know what I'm paying for. And for me, it is really expensive and I don't enjoy that. But I'm also paying for a level of like wokeness that is not going to be back in my red state.
Okay, Shiz, to this day, even with the high cost of housing, San Francisco is still a city for people who want to belong.
It's a beautiful city. And it's a city that is 58% people of color. And we don't often think about it that way because we're so socialized to look at bus drivers and bus boys and people like that as part of the furniture. But it's everywhere. It's like people of color are a part of what makes the city a magical place. Okay, this is an excerpt from a poem about my grandmother. It's called Bachan Grandma. In 1942, Pearl Harbor forced you from the coast into a tar paper desert, a shimmering mirage that would not dissolve. Inside your shoe, remnants of your previous life. A clipping Jap house burns to the ground. And cash from the realtor who paid next to nothing for your businesses. How many dollars remained when they let you out in 1946? Don't come back to the coast, friends warned. They're shooting out our windows at night. They won't sell us gas or fertilizer. So you came north to start again, at 57, on your knees, sharecropping strawberries in another tar paper compound.
Mm-hmm. And so what was going on during that era? Was that...
That was after Pearl Harbor. Japanese Americans were incarcerated. All the Japanese Americans on the West Coast were ordered to leave, and because neighboring states wouldn't take them, most of them were incarcerated, 120,000 people, men, women, and children. Two-thirds of them were American-born citizens. The other third were immigrants that had been in this country a minimum of 18 years, many of them much longer than that, but they, because of the color of their skin, they had not been allowed to be citizens.
And we're still seeing all of these things happening today, this idea of certain groups as being foreign threats. We're seeing that with people of Middle Eastern descent. And I spoke with one of the writers about the issue of identity that came up in the book. Her name is Dina Rod. She's Iranian-American. She was born in Oakland, grew up in Berkeley and Pleasant Hill.
It's something that I have had to grapple with my entire life, and I've never seen it as a threat until now. Only after the Muslim travel ban in January 2017, that's when I felt like an endangered species, and that's when I felt like I needed to say something about it, and that's why my piece, Fernway, is submitted to the anthology about that particular experience for myself.
I'm walking to the bookstore, Bird and Beckett. There's a literary magazine launch party being held there, and one of my poems has been selected for publication. At last, I'm a contributing writer. Published and stepping over pigeons sipping gutter water like cocktails, I am arriving, stepping over the threshold of something wondrous and new. I have a spring in my step. There's a man waiting at a bus stop, an unlit cigarette between his fingers. His hand reaches out for me as I pass by. He asks me if I'm American. I immediately tense up, my defenses engage, and I want nothing to do with him. My mind leaps to the worst possible conclusions, my body remembering strangers stopping me on the walks home from school, asking me if I spoke English, asking me where I was from, as the answer up the street wasn't good enough for their curiosity. Armoring my body against this man, who could quite possibly be a tourist, perhaps just asking for directions, or maybe even a lighter for his cigarette. But my tolerance for microaggressions has reached less than 10% in 2017. My steps quicken, my breath shortens as he reaches for me and I yell, "Leave me alone!" I rush past as he exclaims, "Wait, wait!" I can hear his footsteps behind me, my pulse races. Who do I trust in this landscape?
That's Dina Rod reading from her piece, Fernway, at the San Francisco Public Library. What kind of conversations have you had with the contributors of the book about the hope and fear for the city?
I think a lot of people are hopeful, and there are many of us. And it's not a division between people of color and white folks, because this town has so many progressive white allies. And, you know, it's not about anybody being better than anybody. It's about us all working together for a better life for all of us.
I spoke with the woman in the audience. Her name was Loba Yates, and she came to the event from Vallejo with her 10-year-old daughter. And Loba grew up in San Francisco, but she moved away.
Well, all of them were great, but Tiny's really stood out to me because, like she said, she was speaking on a population that people, they don't want to look at. We want to look the other way and act like they don't exist.
I am a poverty scholar, that houseless mama, that houseless daughter. I am a poverty scholar. All the people you don't want to see, never want to be, look away from me. What you gonna do, arrest me? We're in your city.
So it was just really nice hearing, you know, from someone like, hey, we are here, you know, I am human, you know, the things I'm going through does matter. And also seeing the artwork, that was another piece too, you know, the artwork was just so amazing. But one thing that stood out to me was Mark Harris, I believe that was his name, Home Sweet Home, the painting he did of the, you know, the white family sitting there at their house and, you know, just looking all content and, you know, but underneath their homes were, you know, our people, you know, all of that was built up on the backs of our people. So with that, I just know that there is greater strength inside of me to live to be my best self as these artists are doing, and yeah, try to make it better, you know, because we've had enough suffering, enough pain, enough, like, come on now, like, we deserve to be happy in our lifetime. That's when I want to see it. I don't want to have the hope for it, oh yeah, you know, my grandchildren when I'm gone. No, right now. Why not right now?
So, Shiz, how does what Loba said resonate with you?
That's exactly why I do what I do. I had never met Loba, but to hear her response, the fact that she came and that what she heard gives her hope.